Blog Talk Radio.
Women have the power to transform this world. We can end crime, violence, and poverty if we all agree to do one. Women have the power to transform this world. We can end crime, violence, and poverty if we all agree to do one thing. Share. Let's share our wisdom, share our time, share our talent, share our finances. But most of all, let's share our love. This is the Female Solution. Join me, Naima Latif, and my co-host, Sister Wasifa Tarver, and Minister Cynthia Marie Williams, every morning, Monday through Friday, from 7 a.m. to 8 a.m. Central Standard Time, here on Blog Talk Radio, as we connect with women everywhere and learn how to form healthy relationships. Collectively, we can heal our world. But first, we need to heal ourselves. Call in and join our discussion. 347-539-5639.
Good morning, and thank you for listening to The Female Solution. I'm your host, Naima Latif, and we've got a very exciting topic this morning. We've got so many families that are struggling with this, and this holiday season, you really feel the pain. Today, we're going to talk about how do you support a loved one that is in prison. So many of us have loved ones that are away from the family right now, and it's hurtful to know that we can't be there for them during this time when so many families are gathering. So when we come back, we're going to talk to our guest, Reverend Helen St. Clair, longtime activist in the prison industry, one who has served as chaplain, and also one who has touched the hearts of so many that are separated from their families. So hold on, we'll be right back in just a moment.
Enjoy a clean home without lifting a finger. Come home to a totally clean house and have more time for yourself and your family. At Speak and Span Home Cleaning, we do the cleaning for you. Call us today for a free estimate at 773-936-9811. No house is too dirty. Again, that's 773-936-9811. We are waiting to clean for you.
There are people who choose to make a positive difference in the world. Our job is to bring you their stories to motivate you to do the same. Join us each week, hosts John Alexander and Naima Latif, as we bring you the educators, entertainers, elected officials, religious leaders, and community activists whose works are transforming this world. Find out how you can make a difference too. Be inspired. Watch the Media Connection.
Hi, this is John Alexander.
And I'm Naima Latif. Meet people like you who are making a positive difference in the world.
Big difference.
Watch us every day on The Media Connection at www.youtube.com/TheMediaConnectionTV.
YouTube it. We'll see you soon.
And we're back. You're listening to The Female Solution. I'm your host, Naima Latif. And we've got with us today someone you should know. And joining me also is my co-host, Minister Cynthia Marie Williams. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Can you hear me, Sister Naima?
Yes,
can you hear
I can.
Me? Okay, great. Thank you.
And we're bringing on with us this morning, Reverend Helen St. Clair.
Good morning, ma'am.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good.
Well, we certainly do appreciate talking to you this morning, because we've been discussing the effect of incarceration on families, you know, how it feels to the children when parents are absent, the hurt that they feel, and particularly the sense of abandonment, and how that affects them. But now we're looking at it from the other side, you know, how it feels for someone who has been locked up, and when they don't have access to family members. You know, a lot of times when a person goes to prison, there's the stigma of it. There's the shame of the family. And then there's the financial distress of trying to pay for legal help. And then there is the really lack of guidance on what to do to be emotionally supportive. Can you give us a little bit of your background for our listeners, those who may not be familiar with the work of Jesse Ma Houston and the Prison Outpost, and then what you have done over the years and helping build that connection to those who've been separated from society? Give us a little background on yourself, if you would, please.
Yes, ma'am.
And try not to be too modest, because she's a great woman. You know, she's so modest. But just, you know,
oh, wow.
All the good stuff, because, you know, you're so powerful.
Well, the first thing I would have to tell you, well, thank you anyway, is that my first experience with the jail was because we had a boarder. My mother had a health kitchen here in our home on East 41st Street. And we had a boarder we were trying to put a little fat on. And he opened some mail, another with $5 in it, and they arrested him. And, of course, my mother had to try and go and find out why he was arrested, and that's how we started going to Cook County Jail. And when she got there, he continued, as she wanted to read the scriptures to him, as she was a missionary, he kept telling her, come back on Sunday when the people are here with white on, which meant missionaries. He knew my mother was a missionary from St. Paul CME Church, and I was following her around, and I was very young, but I was also putting on white as a missionary. So she went to see him, and he kept telling her to come back on Sunday. And finally she came back on Sunday, and that's when she fell in love with the prayer warriors. She called them missionaries and prayer warriors. And that was back in 1945, right after World War II.
Wow.
And, of course, yeah, and she started working with five young men who were scheduled to be electrocuted. And
oh,
the electric chair, because the electric chair was at Cook County Jail at that time. And she got so much out of them because they became ready to die. And it was just something to go and talk to them. And they would study the Bible and everything. And I found out that they were always praying for me.
Oh, my.
Yeah. When I looked in their Bible, you know, they left their Bibles to my mother. And I would see all in there. We were praying for Helen. I said, was I terrible? But no. Maybe she saw that maybe one day I would follow in her footsteps. So that's how that started. And that was 1945, and it was only one building at Cook County. Now there are 11.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my. So the prison population has grown. Now, you have grown up with someone who has shown that kind of compassion toward those who the society throws away. So how did that impact you, seeing how she had an effect on prisoners, some who were scheduled to die, some who may be serving life sentences, some who may have not had anybody? How did that affect you in making you want to follow in her footsteps?
I guess it's because I had always been around some. My mom has always been giving to people. And as a young girl, at that time, my mama was not poor. And so I had a lot of money, and I used to buy things for other little children. Like, you know, I had beautiful patent leather shoes and all kind of dresses hanging all around. So I would buy things for people. So I guess that's how I felt, you know, that we're supposed to help each other. And, you know, I was talking to my son, who's doing a survey on bullying, and I was talking about the fact that a lot of times when people had clothes and looked nice, other little children they wanted to play with would jump on them, and they never knew why. So now I'm finding out, you know, I'm thinking about why, because I would have a lot of things and they didn't. And I think that's why bullying is still going on. because most of the time you find out that the children who are being bullied are kind of well off. Most of the time. This is what our survey is showing us.
A lot of jealousy.
So I love what I'm doing, and I never thought I'd be a chaplain in the prison, but I did know that I would be a pastor. I thought I'd have
now,
a church.
Now, what does the chaplain do in a prison? What does the chaplain do? What are their responsibilities, and you know, how do they carry that out?
Well, the chaplain is supposed to assure everyone that's incarcerated that whatever their religion is, they try to help them to get that, whether it means trying to find someone. Suppose you're a Muslim. Suppose you're Moorish. You know, whatever you are, the chaplain is supposed to try and find somebody in your religion. Most of the chaplains that I knew about when I was young and my mother started, we thought only Catholic priests could go to the prison because that's all you saw.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's all you ever saw. Somebody get ready to, you know, be executed.
Right.
They call in the priest.
Right. Yes, and if you saw a movie, there was a Catholic priest always there. So I thought that was all it could go, but my mom broke that.
She broke the barrier. So now, whatever your faith, or if you don't have a faith even, but a chaplain is to help you find faith or help
that's
you.
That's right, right, right.
Suppose
you're there's a young group of Muslims there. Well, they're supposed to search and find someone to come and teach them, and then when their holy days come, they also help them to have that. You know, what is it that the Muslims do? I'm thinking of the Jewish and the Jewish. There's not very many Jewish people in there.
You mean
the
Ramadan?
Rabbis come. Yes, right.
Yes.
Yes. I've been invited to many of those.
30-day of fasting, yes. Yes. So, that's a beautiful thing. And really, if our prisons were set up to actually help people who have made mistakes in life to find that spiritual connection, it really would be about rehabilitating them and helping them become better people. But instead, unfortunately, our prisons have become a business where it preys upon the families that a lot of times don't have the financial means help a person. They're the prisons that are, once a person is sentenced, they're sent way out. You know, that the person is living in the city and they get sent out to some far distant land in you know, downstate Illinois. Families can't come visit, so it becomes a punishment for the family. And you know, when you leave a person alone, you're in isolation. You know, no contact, and then the violence that's going on in the prison, how can it possibly be a place to be rehabilitated when you're fighting for your survival and you don't have that regular family reinforcement to even give you hope?
Yes. One of the things that I tell people a lot of times is that, and I was at Dwight yesterday, that's where the women are, and some of the young ladies, they were so impressed and so, they felt our service so much till afterwards they came up there in tears in their eyes thanking us. They said, because you all taught us today how we should live and how we've gotten off track. I said, wait, hold it. Let me say something to you. We neglected you. We stopped teaching our children. It's our fault. We stopped teaching our children. People start telling their children, I don't want you to go through what I went through. What I went through to get where I am is what you need to go through to make you a strong person. But we took a lot of that away from our children. I don't want my kid to do that. I've known people who had businesses who, instead of letting their children start at the bottom, they'd be very upset if they didn't get the top job in that business. I said, that's not the way to do that.
So they didn't teach them basically how to work and how to go through things and how to develop
character.
That's
right. So now you go in some of our business, you don't see any of their children working.
Right, you don't. And then the businesses never get passed down to the second generation. After the first person who founded it dies, the business dies because they didn't.
That's right.
And a lot of them, you know, they want to give their children the material benefits, but not really teach them what it takes to get those material benefits. So the children never learn the value of hard work and never really learn the sense of responsibility. When you have money, like you said, you know, you had money, but you knew that you really should give and share to those who don't have. A lot of people didn't learn that. People who grew up with money, a lot of times they grew up very selfish.
Right.
But now, did you see a pattern of a certain type of person who ended up in prison? I know when I was teaching parenting classes in Cook County Jail, the pattern that I saw a lot of time were people who were from families that parents neglected them, whether they had money or not, the children were neglected at some point and just didn't get the guidance that
right.
they should have gotten.
Dysfunctional.
Yes.
And I was telling some of the young ladies, I said, you know, when you say you're just like your old father, that's not a good thing. Because you should always, when the Bible says honor your father and your mother, that thy days may be long. They didn't say if your father and mother are perfect. They didn't say that because, I know, because sometimes you might have a father who drinks, but he still might tell you the right thing. So it's not like, oh, I'm not thinking about him because he drinks, you know. And so that's what a lot of people don't realize. It didn't say, they said respect them. However, if they're your father and your mother, that's due them. They brought you in the world.
I have a question I'd like to ask the Reverend on myself. Reverend, this is Minister Cynthia Marie Williams, and I feel that spiritual responsibility to work and help people in our council and teach that which the universe has given me. But I have a question to ask you about those young men that were going to be executed. Now, we know today in 2012, many of these people have not been guilty of anything. Yes, there are some that are, but many of our young men and women are incarcerated because of the criminal justice system that is very racist. They're still gunning down black young men today. As I listened to Reverend Sharp, she talked about this woman's son in Arkansas worked for a white man and down there right after, what was this, in November the 9th it happened, after the election, he just gunned the boy down. Now, the police came and they determined that they are investigating and they did not arrest the man. So it's almost like the Trayvon Martin situation in Florida,
right,
where you have the white male dominant people who are determining that this man confessed. He's the owner of the business, white man. And he confessed that he shot him. The body's right there. And as the young one was, a mother, was talking, it was just so hurtful. And the only thing they kept telling her was it was under investigation. And what are we talking about? Probable cause. We're talking about Trayvon Martin and Zimmerman standing your ground. But what is this with police and judge and jury? They're not supposed to do that. If they're sitting there and if they're there and someone confesses, if there's a body there, then they're supposed to arrest the person. This just happened November the 9th. So I say to you, Reverend, going into the prison system and these particular young men or women you said were going to be executed, what do you feel that you were able to do to help these young men to look forward to what? Spiritually. Would you share that with me, please? You and your mother have done that for years. You followed her nursing. What do you think you gained spiritually by helping these young men, particularly these ones that you said were going to be executed?
Because they were, in fact, executed at the end, right? They were executed?
Yes.
Some of them were. No, wait a minute. You know what? Let me tell you. There's a young man, my mother and I, in the Jesse Mar Houston Prison Ministry, we have been the only people that missionaries that could go into death row in Menard and Pontiac down through the years. We had services with them. We loved those services better than some of the other services because the people were real. If they believed, they believed. And then when they were in those services, they did. Now, I was on my way to Israel, to the Holy Land, and one of the young men, his name was Enoch, which I thought was very spiritual.
Yeah, interesting.
And he asked me, he said, would you take this note and stick it in the wailing wall for me?
Wow.
And I said, now that shows how much faith that those young men, many of them on death row. Now, everybody didn't come to serve. There was 15 of them. Now, there are a lot of people on death row. I'm sure they didn't believe anything. But these 15 came to services every time we were there. And when he gave me that note to take to the Holy Land, that really impressed me. I said, first
you know what
of all,
what
he has
said,
Did you know what the note said, or did he have it sealed?
No, he didn't have it sealed.
Oh.
But anyway, I'm saying if he had the faith to think that would help, and had the faith to give it to me, you know, then I had the faith to take it there. I didn't know what the Holy Land was. He probably knew, about the will and war until he told me. But I read it because I thought, I better look and see what it said. He was not asking for anything for him. He was asking for the next brother who was supposed to be executed. And I thought that was really something that he was writing and saying. I don't remember what the other brother's name was, but Enoch was saying, this is a young man. And you know what happened to Enoch? He was never executed because he died one night in his cell.
Oh, my.
His mother did not have to go through all of that. So that shows what faith does. He died, but he didn't die in the electric chair. He didn't die. However, they were doing it. And I said, now that just shows you how his faith kept that off of his mother. Because it is really, now how do you think it feels for a mother to have to come somewhere and they're going to execute your child and you're there and all the publicity and the media and everything. But one night a brother called the mother from the prison and said, Enoch died. He's already dead. Even the people in the prison did not know that. So this is what makes my faith, you know. After my mom left, I just kept going. Because the day her funeral was at Rainbow, I went to the prison that next day, not knowing they were going to let me in. But I said, I have to go. I don't have time to cry about my mom. She left this mission for me. Yesterday, these young ladies came, and they were thanking us with tears in their eyes. These are young ladies who get there early, and they were doing praise dancing and telling us what we meant to them. And I said, but see, we failed you because we didn't teach you all these
things. Praise dancing, they were the ladies doing praise dancing. They were some of the incarcerated women.
Yes,
oh,
ma'am.
Okay.
They've earned that special thing that they can do, and they had the music on, you know, and they were dancing. They do that before our service starts. We start at 1:00. They come in at 11:45, and that's what they do. Now they're moving all the ladies.
Wow.
Reverend, I want to ask you, Reverend, another question. Now, in the early 70s, I worked with the Department of Justice, Federal Bureau of Prisons, and it was an outreach program where they would come out of the federal penitentiaries and have to stay somewhere, like halfway, little so much halfway out. It was a YMCA. And one of the things that I believe Spirit had me make contact with these people coming out, one of the things that Sister Naima and I were talking about is before, like, there's no rehabilitation. What do you feel over all these years? Have they not cut down on these kinds of programs when people come out of the penitentiary? Have you heard of Safer Foundation, Thresholds, and some other programs that they had? They help people to get themselves back into the community.
Yes.
Yeah, because we've been doing this for so long, and I have made contact there were women coming out of the Alderson, West Virginia prison system, and also, that, like I said, the rehabilitation programs are almost non-existent. How do you feel about this over all these years that you've working in the prison?
Well, I know they're very important because most of the time I tell the young men, I say, when you go home, they're going to be happy to see you for a minute or two or a week. But when you keep staying in the bed waiting for somebody to wake you up and all the kinds of things you've learned in the prison and have forgotten how to get up yourself and do these things or how to go look for a job, they're going to get very tired of you in about a week and say, wait a minute. I'm getting up every morning doing this and that. Man, you can't live. But see, they have gotten acclimated to somebody waking them up and telling them what to do, clothes, you know, everything. That's why St. Leonard's House and Safe and all those places are fantastic. But see, our people are not conscious enough to help those places to make it. Our people are not conscious enough to do that. They raise money for whatever they want to. But for things like St. Leonard's House and places like that, we should all be involved.
I don't think they have the knowledge, Reverend. I mean, they're not aware. I talked to a couple men that have come out of the system, and I just talked to a guy the other day, and the program that they did have was closed down because they are set up as nonprofits, and this funding issue has really been devastating to a lot of social programs out here, because I had one myself for literacy, helping people to learn how to read and write and help people get their GEDs. And like 2009, before I got sick in May, they were cutting out so much money to homeless shelters and things like that, and there was a big protest in Springfield. We used to go back and forth to Springfield to impact those legislators down there. But the funding, this guy just told me, he said, that rehabilitation program for people coming out of the prison system, they didn't get the funding, so that was cut. So we got a lot of those programs that were helping people to readjust. One more thing, and I'll let you answer the question I'm asking, please. There was a guy that came through the program when I was at the Bureau of Prisons at the YMCA downtown. He came, and he was just so proud. I mean, he didn't even know me, but he came down there showing me his beautiful watch he had on and telling me about the job he had gotten, all of that. And he seemed to have adjusted. He was a white guy. And he seemed to be really proud of the fact that he had come out the prison system and was doing well. So I say, my question again, I say, is those programs, in all the years that you've done all this work, you feel the devastation that there are no programs like that available today. And you're right about we as a people not understanding that we need to be raising funds for programs like that. So what do you feel about that, ma'am?
Yeah. Well, you know what? Before you answer that question, we got to take a quick break and callers. Hold on. Mm-hmm. We got a couple more callers. We're gonna bring into the conversation, and we want you to answer that question about these programs that are missing when we come back, and what we can do to supplement their absence, because we still have the need to prepare people when they come back to their families. We'll be right back in just a moment. Hold on, callers. We'll get to you in just a moment. We're gonna hear your answer on what we can do to support those who are in prison. We'll be back in just a moment.
Enjoy a clean home without lifting a finger. Come home to a totally clean house and have more time for yourself and your family. At Spick and Span Home Cleaning, we do the cleaning for you. Call us today for a free estimate at 773-936-9811. No house is too dirty. Again, that's 773-936-9811. We are waiting to clean for you.
We're back. You're listening to The Female Solution. I'm your host, Naima Latif, and we've got Reverend Helen St. Clair, Queen Mother, Reverend Helen St. Clair, Reverend Helen St. Clair, who's been a world traveler and a long, long time activist for the rights of those who are incarcerated, coming from a great legacy of the Jesse Ma Houston prison outpost. And really, this is a conversation that touches my heart, because, you know, when I went into the prison and first of all, I was doing some performing for prisoners during my college years, and then when I came out and teaching parenting classes in the jails, I guess my first thought was, there before the grace of God go I. And any of us
can make
a wrong decision, end up behind bars, doing time. But Minister Cynthia Marie Williams was asking, how are we impacted now by a lot of those programs that are missing, and what can we do to supplement those? And we're going to bring a couple more people into the conversation after your answer and get their perspective on some of their experiences. But you go right ahead. What can we do?
Yeah, I used to hear my daughter say that half of the churches, they're closed all the time except on Sunday. And sometimes the people get out of the prison, they lay down on the front, on the porch, on the steps of the church, and the pastor come out and step over and keep moving.
I think that
a lot of our churches need to, you know, turn on some lights and open up, and they're the ones who should be involved, because they do get, you know, they do have people who come to church and they do put in their money, and so that the churches ought to be very much involved. That was one of the things that the Catholic Church did always do, is open their doors. But a lot of our churches, you pass, and we had them on every street. Sometimes we have four and five churches on a block. those churches should be opening up, take turns, and say, now, well, let's work together. I heard all these people. These people were feeding people during Thanksgiving. I was hearing them calling in on the radio saying, we have food at our church. Come on, we're going to feed you. We do this every week. That's some churches. But there are other churches who do nothing. They walk right on by people that that need something. And that's why they had that parable in the Bible where they, you know, the man was laying on the side.
The Samaritan,
and church,
yes. The
that's right. Why do you think all that is in the Bible? Why is that in the Bible? They're trying to teach people. But my pastor told me, say, Sinclair, a lot of people come to church every Sunday. They don't know what the Bible says. I said, well, I
that's
guess
right.
You're right.
They don't know
they
how to
hear
apply it. You have to care about
it. Doesn't affect
people.
Them.
That's right.
I heard people say at my church a couple of times and say, that's for the pastors to do when it says I was in prison and you visited me. They say, oh, that's for the pastors to do. But the Bible doesn't say that. It didn't
that's
say
right.
Revelation.
Everybody. That's right.
I was in
that's
prison
right.
and you visited me. If you did it to the least of these, my brothers, you did it unto me.
That's right. That's what it says. That's what we should be following. Visit those in prison.
Yes.
Got a call we want to bring into the conversation from area code 773-936. And, of course, we want to hear from our good friend. Give us your name and a little bit of background about yourself and your comment because, you know, we know you're a person of great wisdom and experience that can really give us some insight in this situation.
Well, greetings to you all and greetings to Queen Mother. This is Sister Wasifa Tarver.
All right, Tarver.
I have seen Queen Mother at Soul Vegetarian restaurant one day. With me being a former inmate, I was incarcerated for 12 years and 6 months in federal prison. And, you know, I hear you discussing the program. Well, I did go through the SAFER program. It was to no avail. They didn't have any job leads for me. They told me to went to school while I was in prison, that they didn't have any jobs that met my skill set. The housing program, none of the programs, I tried two different programs, met the needs that I needed with me not knowing anyone here and coming out of incarceration from the 12 years and without any support was very hard for me. But by the grace of Allah, I did make it, and I've got my own housing, my job at a real estate company. And, I've been excelling ever since. But we have to come together as a community and ourselves that's coming out. Some sisters are not as strong as others. And, you know, that would have caused them to panic and maybe turn to a comfort zone. Because after you've been incarcerated for so long, you unconsciously become institutionalized. Where I went, that some behaviors that I thought was normal, that my mother pointed out that wasn't normal. I was bathing 3 and 4 times a day where my skin was drying out because I always because I always felt dirty in prison.
Excessive behavior, the constant bathing, just trying to get the feeling of dirtiness off of you. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And I was protective of small things, like this is my towel. Don't give me a towel or, don't wash, don't move my towel. It was just, things that we take very personal. And
wow.
I brought those behavior, like I personalized everything belonged to me, and I found myself putting things up, so other people, and this was a behavior for me. 12 years. So we do need strong sisters, that even I suggested meet sisters, go to the bus stop and see who's getting out and bring them in and help them make that transition into society. But none of the programs I went through were successful.
So those are things that we need to do, like maybe like a debriefing, because, like Queen Mother, you were mentioning people doing things, somebody who just got out of prison and doing things like hiding
eggs
in their room, hiding food because you're just so used to having to guard your things, in that kind of environment that, you don't know how to adjust to a regular home lifestyle where everybody shares, nobody's suspicious of anybody, just
And then the longer you spend in there, the more indoctrinated you get into that kind of belief where it's very hard to make that transition to just normal relationships where you trust people. And I think that's the biggest thing that's gone is the trust of people in everyday situations. And that can be very hard trying to go home and have a marriage with somebody and you still kind of got the prison behavior and don't even know that you have it. That's a big step.
You've
got another caller I'm going to bring into the conversation.
I wish you would come to our meeting on Tuesday.
That is somebody I had in mind. I told you I wanted to bring somebody to the meeting. You know, these are two sisters I definitely want to bring to the meeting. And we've got another caller I want to definitely bring in the conversation.
All right.
Code 773-858. State your name and your comment and this topic.
Yes, hello. My name is Haroon, and man, I'm really feeling this show. You sisters are incredible. Y'all got a lot of good information. You know, I was once incarcerated myself, so I went through a lot of the psychological effects after being locked up. You know, I went to the Safer Foundation. I was actually in the North Lawndale Work Release Center. And, you know, it did help a lot because they had classes to help, you know, with cognitive thinking and help people change their way of thinking. They had a lot of good programs in there. And the reality is it's hard for Safer Foundation to help because no one wants to hire ex-offenders. So it's hard for them to help get a job. They do try. They try hard. But it's hard, you know, because this whole system is designed as a revolving door. It's not designed for us to come out and be good citizens and work and get jobs. It's designed for us to go back inside. You know, it's designed for us not to even make it off of parole to get locked back up again. So when it's hard and you can't find a job and these type of things, and especially you might not have no family support, like the sister was saying that, you know, it's a sort of family shame, then your family don't want to deal with you, and then you get locked up, then you don't have no family support while you're in there. It's hard for you to get soap and all type of other things, just to wash up. Then you get out, and then, you know, it's like a little animosity with your family. You don't want to deal with them. They don't want to deal with you.
Wow.
Now you don't really have no support unless you are, you know, with a church or a mosque. And those are good things that really help. And they do a lot inside the penitentiary, you know. So I commend you, Sister St. Clair.
Thank you.
So you get out and then there's no job. You don't have no family support, but you don't want to go back. You're trying to do the right thing. You're trying to work with the Safer Foundation and, you know, things just not working. Then people go back to what they know how to do.
Yep.
So,
all right.
That's the hard
sell drugs,
reality.
Steal, you know, whatever you got to do to survive. Now you mentioned it was hard to get things like soap. Are there little things that the prison doesn't provide that if you don't have family to provide, you don't get, like, you know, soap, toothpaste? I mean, the little things that you need, where do they come from? Does the prison provide them, or is your family expected to bring them to you?
No, the prison provides a lot of prisons. Some of them different, but, you know, that first time when you get there, they'll provide you a little soap, a little care package, but after that, you on your own. So when that run out in about a week, 2 weeks, you basically on your own. Sometimes you might can go and get a bar of soap here and there, but those bars are real small, like a little hotel soap. You know, you go in there, that's good for like one shower, one wash up. But
it's gone.
Yeah. What do you think about it? You know, when you think about it, Statesville is supposed to have maybe 1,500 people or something like that. When they have almost 4,000, that means there's going to be a little shortage on things because there's more people than are supposed to be in the place, you know. Like at county jail, if they're supposed to have maybe 4,000 or 5,000 and they have 9,000, almost 10,000, that's a whole lot of people. Yeah,
and they don't increase
rough.
The budget, so they don't have enough supplies. So then what family members can do is actually to they can bring you things like that, you know, bring you soap, you know, bring you toothpaste, you know, make sure you got a clean toothbrush, you know, a towel, whatever, like Sister was saying, you know, you don't have those things like that, you can call your own. Maybe family members can help decrease that feeling of deprivation by bringing you the little toiletries that can make you feel human. Because, you know, it's hard when you can't wash yourself. That adds to the feeling of degradation, and I think that's one of the things that make it difficult, you know, to get over that feeling of shame when you're constantly being made to feel deprived or made to feel dirty because you're not given things like soap, you know, to just wash yourself. Or even the situation within, I've been told, you know, even within the cell, you know, sometimes like the toilet doesn't work or the sink doesn't work, you know, the whole feeling of being dirty. And it's done on purpose, of course. You know, it's not meant to be a hotel. It's meant to make you feel bad. It's meant to make you feel dirty, like, you know, your low life and all of that. So even if you didn't do a crime, you're made to feel criminal. That's why it's so damaging the way they pick up our young men and put them in jail for the slightest thing. So it's almost like indoctrinating you to feel bad about yourself.
Oh, man, it takes away your almost humanity, like you get some livestock. They put you in there, you know, they make you strip off your clothes, turn around, bend over, cough, lift up your, you know, private parts and do all these things, and, you know, it's like you're not even human anymore, you know, and it's nothing but a slave trade because they trade you off, send you and ship you to other penitentiaries to
work. Oh, wow. The new Jim Crow.
Yes. So now this
is
a book. Right. And, you know, that's a good point as well, because that's why it's become big business, because these people who are in prison are providing free or very low-cost labor for a lot of major corporations. So, you know, he's right. They have it designed so you have to come back, because they want that low-paid or that free labor that they're getting from the prison industry. So they make it so you can't get out and get a decent, good-paying job. And so what other alternatives do you have? You know, and then if you do any little minor thing, you know, selling weed or whatever just to make a few dollars, the next thing you know, they want to haul you back in jail and then likely charge you with something else that you didn't do, you know. So the whole thing becomes a revolving door to keep a labor force. And that's why if the criminal justice system is more criminal than the criminals, how can we ever really have justice?
I know one thing, Naima, this means to our people, you certainly need to vote, because the state reps and the senators of your state are the people who do whatever it is. They pass all the laws. But if we don't tell them, just for instance like Tams, if we don't tell our state rep, close Tams, somebody else is going to say, keep it open. Those are people from another community who want those jobs. And they don't put those prisons down there just because they want to. They couldn't, because we said we don't want them here. We didn't realize that we needed those work release centers right here where our people didn't have to go. But we fought it. We fought it. You were very young then. People here fought getting the work release center. They brought busloads of people to push when I was trying to get the work release center out there at Robbins Motel, which would have been perfect. Parents could go see their children anytime. Our people fought it. They fought
because
over
they were
on
afraid.
The west
they were,
side.
They were looking at their own people. And that's the big point. If you don't have a prison in your community, but it's your community that's in prison, then you're going to have to go away to somebody else's community to see your people. And we're not thinking about
these
dangerous people
in
our neighborhood.
They're going to build, you know, gas stations, hotels, and all that, and build a whole city around
that.
At Thompson. That's why 600 people living in Thompson. And they said, we want this prison, not because they needed jobs, because they all retired, but they could build a city around that place, Thompson.
Wow.
I'm so glad the governor sold that place. I don't know what to do.
So now what is it being used for now that it's sold?
They sold it to the federal government.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they got the money. That's what the governor got, that money. That's helping out a little bit. Yeah, it's so much stuff that we don't know about, don't pay attention to, or don't look at.
Right.
You know, a lot of brothers in the prison, brothers and sisters, they read a lot of stuff, junk, but they need to be reading.
If you need a
job,
brother,
while
I
they
need
in there.
Contact me.
Yes. Yeah. You know, those who. Go ahead, Minister Cynthia. Go ahead.
I have a solution because this is my work. This is one of the issues that I believe the universe has given me. My nephew just came out of boot camp, and my step-grandson is still in Cook County Jail. So he was on house arrest. He just came off. He said he's going out to get him an ID. So I just saw him for Thanksgiving. And I said, weren't they supposed to be getting you a job? I know this gentleman's Sacred Foundation was excellent back in the 70s. But as I said, and I recognize being out here doing my work, that a lot of these programs are cut down because there's no funding. So Sacred Foundation is not doing for the young lady who spent 12 years in there. These programs are decimated by now because of the prison industrial system using them as slaves, as the young man said. But my nephew, as of this moment, when he told me, I said, Thanksgiving, I said, well, are they supposed to get you a job? He said, oh, da, 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 da. But, you know, God is so good, and I tell you, I'm out here, and I do know a guy that through my networking out here and the community work I've been doing that has manufacturing jobs that are hard, expellings. So if the young man wants to make contact with me, I can help him in making contact because I do have my networking as of today. Can I give him the information? Yes. You can look me up on YouTube and Facebook, Cynthia Marie Williams, please. And then you also can contact me at this number. Are you ready, young man? Is he still on the line? You can contact me at 312-802-4743. 312-802-4743. And that's my direct number. And I have also for the sister from the prison system, I have a women's group that meets once a month called Sisters in the Spirit. And this is where I educate African descendant women as to our social, spiritual, psychological history. I also have a support group part where we can deal with some of these emotional and mental issues that we're going through. And that's my next meeting will be December the 17th at the High Park Blackstone Library, Saturday, 2 p.m. to 4:30 p.m. Saturday, 2 p.m. to 4:30 p.m., December the 17th. So you're more than welcome to come. And then, brother, you can call me, too, because I've also been out here with my adult head group working with guys, too. I'm for everyone, but the Spirit has led me, after my coming out of a coma, to go and do the counseling again. I counsel men as well as women. Again, Cynthia Marie Williams on YouTube and Facebook. And so the young lady and the young man, you can call me, 312-802-4743.
Well, thank you so much. And we'll be right back. We're going to take another break. We'll be right back and talk about some of the types of spiritual healing that is needed when people are coming out of a traumatic experience of imprisonment, however long it is, whether it's 6 days, 60 days, or 60 years. I mean, it's traumatic, it's life-changing, it's something that has to be unlearned and really evolved out of and the spiritual cleansing that we can give to those who are coming out, as well as some of the practical things to enable them to get back into society. We'll be right back after this short message. Hold on. And you're listening to The Female Solution. We'll be right back.
There are people who choose to make a positive difference in the world. Our job is to bring you their stories to motivate you to do the same. Join us each week, hosts John Alexander and Naima Latif, as we bring you the educators, entertainers, elected officials, religious leaders, and community activists whose works are transforming this world. Find out how you can make a difference, too. Be inspired. Watch The Media Connection.
Hi, this is John Alexander.
and I'm Naima Latif. Meet people like you who are making a positive difference in the world.
Big difference.
Watch us every day on The Media Connection at www.youtube.com/TheMediaConnectionTV.
YouTube it. We'll see you soon.
And we're back. You're listening to The Female Solution. I'm your host, Naima Latif, and we've got some great people on today. Of course, you want to listen and learn from Queen Mother Reverend Helen Sinclair, who has been in the prison ministry for decades. And even ministering to people on death row is such a profound thing when you think about preparing somebody for a transition that's imminent. And it's different than ministering to somebody that's sick and in a hospital. Because that's you're kind of more resigned to, you know, okay, your body is about to, expire, and you know you're ready to move on. But when your life is going to be taken, you know, that's such a horrible, hurtful thing. So being able to help people through that process has got to be profound. But now, even when a person has been through the prison experience, they've been punished by society, by the state, and they're coming out and they're feeling bad about themselves because of the stigma. It follows you. You know, the feeling of dirtiness, like Sister West people were saying, you know, the feeling that you're dirty all the time, and then being treated badly by people who won't hire you for a job and they won't let you move on with your life. How can we emotionally help people that are coming out and are you know, suffering from low self-esteem, distrust? What are some of the ways you can minister to them so that they can regain their sense of wholeness as a human being?
One of the things that we've been doing at the Jesse My Houston Prison Ministry of the Rainbow Push is traveling all February to all the prisons that are far from us, bringing black history. I find out when people know who they are, they're a lot different. Because a lot of our young people have no idea who they are, and when they find out who they are, that I am somebody. I may be in prison, but the prison is not in me. I have to thank Reverend Jackson, because when he first went to Washington and they had that Poor People's March, and he came out and told people, and they start saying, I am somebody. I did not know I was anybody at that time. And I said, that helped. And when we go in these prisons and get those brothers and sisters to say, I am somebody. I am God's child. I may be poor. I may be in prison. Prison does not have to be in me. So that gets them to start thinking, I have to think another way. I have to think differently than I was thinking when I came here, because I still am somebody. That's why Dr. Burroughs was in there for years teaching creative writing. Some of the writing those brothers have done, they're just absolutely beautiful, because they don't get bitter. Most of them do not get bitter when they're learning. They just know, this is my home here, so let me keep it clean. Let me help people. Let me teach people what I know. And you get in there, and I'm telling you, those brothers who give you so much love, you just feel like, I'm so glad God gave me this. This is a privilege to be able to go into those prisons. And you see the brothers walking, and they're all saying, God bless you. God bless you, Mother Sinclair. That is more than a notion. And I say, God keeps blessing me. He keeps blessing me.
Something.
I hear people talk about all these things that are hurting them. And I'm saying, I guess God said he got to keep me on my feet so I can go to Dwight. That's 100 miles we drove yesterday and back with those sisters. And those sisters came and thanked us because they said we made them do some thinking about what they did and how they can stop coming there. I said, you all are mothers, you're sisters. You hurt somebody when you came here. Now, listen, when you have business, don't sit up and play cards. Talk about something serious. Read some books.
Mm.
Study the book. Do something. And you see, when they keep their brain going, it makes it a lot different. And we have some successes out here. They're working in some of these law places. Yes, they are. Some of the people, we had something called the Vanguard, where my daughter was teaching. She said, you're going to come out of here different than a lot of the prisons who come out. And every one of those people in that vanguard, they tell us, we're different. We're different. I said, that's right. And we put some work into that. And we're going to do that some more. Like, you know, 6-week courses on different things. Volunteers are needed, not just preaching and hollering and jumping, but coming in and teaching something to them, teaching them nutrition, teaching them how to read, as you say, parenting. How many people don't know how to be parents?
And that's really
and their kids follow them in there. Their kids
that's
follow them to the prison.
Generations of families in the prison.
That's right.
Well, you know, I think all of us on the line would probably like to work with you. Tell us again when you meet and where you meet. I think it's, you said Tuesday at Push. Tell us again, because, you know,
we've been
I
meeting
I
on
like
Tuesday. Yeah, at Rainbow Push, Tuesday at 6 o'clock. And we're putting all kinds of programs together for Cook County, for the state also. So whatever work you can
right?
do. We can use. We need teachers, people who can help the choirs. Like I want some people to be singing at Cook County Christmas. Mother York's son used to teach music there. He's dead now. That music shouldn't stop because he's not there. He had choirs when we come in on Christmas. That choir would sing that he had put together, and you get so much out of it yourself.
And you know what you said about the love, and that was a big experience that I had. And you would think that people who are in jail would maybe be some of the angriest, bitterness, bitterest people. But you know the love that you get from people when you give, because the more you give, the more you receive. So it was a life changing experience for me. I think it changed me more than it changed them, and really
definitely
helped grow some compassion and love and understanding in me. So I definitely want to work with you and push it at 930 East 50th Street in Chicago. For those who are not in Chicago, of course, it's 50th and Drexel in Chicago, and it's Tuesday at 6 o'clock. We want to join you there. And then Push is also going to the prison on going to Cook County Jail on Christmas Day, because Reverend Jackson does a regular Christmas Day visit. And, you know, again, you know, you see human beings, and that's what we got to do is see people as human beings. Everybody is the same. I am my brother's keeper because I am my brother. I am my sister.
Right.
And when we see that, then we know that whatever a person has done, you are not the worst act that you have done. You are higher than that. You are greater than that. And when we see the God in each other, no matter what we have done, then we can bring out the God in each other. And I think that's our goal as human beings, is to bring out the God spirit in all of us, wherever we are, whatever we may have done, so that we can always be striving to be the better person that we were meant to be. So I want to thank you for what you have done and inspiring us. And for you all listening, I want you to know this is a beautiful-looking woman you never believe she's 92 years old. Never.
I'm thankful for you because I've been watching you down through the years, and I've always admired you, so, you know.
Thank you so much. I'm trying to follow in your footsteps, you know.
wonderful.
Well, I want to thank all of you all for participating because, you know, we get so many listeners that listen in after the broadcast because, you know, they can go to the recording and hear the program.
Yeah.
So even though they can't call and participate, they can still get the wisdom. And this goes worldwide, so you are helping
change the world. Listen, I've been in prison in South Africa and all over Malawi and Jamaica and Cuba. I go to prisons everywhere, and the people are all the same.
Yes, everybody indeed. In the world is the same. And that's the greatest lesson to learn. We are one.
That's
well,
right.
I want to thank all of you all for listening to The Female Solution. We're out of time now, but I want you to join me again tomorrow. We'll be talking with Johnny Savory, who spent 30 years in prison for a crime he did not commit. And that's another person
whose
spirit was not broken. But he'll be able to talk to us more about how we can really fight this injustice in the criminal justice system so that we can help our brothers and sisters who have been wrongly incarcerated, as well as those who should have been incarcerated, but need to come out and heal the wounds from the past so that they can be the godly people that they were created to be. And we always thank you all for listening. Listen to us every Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 8 a.m. here on Blog Talk Radio. And go to our website at www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com. And we'll see you all again tomorrow. Have a blessed day.
All right. Shalom.
Sounds like North Carolina.
Women have the power to transform this world. We can end crime, violence, and poverty if we all agree to do one thing. Share. Let's share our wisdom, share our time, share our talent, share our finances. But most of all, let's share our love. This is the Female Solution. Join me, Naima Latif, and my co-host, Sister Wasifa Tarver, and Minister Cynthia Marie Williams, every morning, Monday through Friday, from 7 a.m. to 8 a.m. Central Standard Time, here on Blog Talk Radio, as we connect with women everywhere and learn how to form healthy relationships. Collectively, we can heal our world, but first, we need to heal ourselves. Call in and join our discussion, 347-539-5639.